the merciful, the compassionate. All praises to Allah, the creator of the universes and their sustainer, the provider of believers and unbelievers. And may his choicest blessings be on the seal of his prophets, the last of his messengers and his holy progeny. And in particular, may his special blessings ever continue to flow on that fifth member of the household of the holy prophet, on Sayyid al-Shuhada, Aba Abdullah al-Husayn, salawatullahi wa salamu alayhi. Before we commence the discussions on our agenda for this evening, I wish to make a correction of a slip I made last night, on which I'm grateful to that brother who drew my attention to it. I mentioned that the death, the martyrdom in Siffin of Malik Ashtar was mentioned to Muawiyah because the Holy Prophet said his martyrdom would be caused by a Baghi. In fact, that personality was Ammar Yasir, as we discussed 2 years back. Malik Ashtar, as we also discussed 2 years back, was assassinated by the machination of Amr bin As on his way to Egypt. So it was Ammar Yasir. The point I was making, however, remains intact, that Muawiyah, according to that hadith of the Holy Prophet, was described as a Baghi, and according to the words of Jibreel from Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala himself to the Holy Prophet, those who would kill Imam Hussein alayhi salam in Karbala would also be Baghi. But that episode of Karbala started with the death of Muawiyah. I did not wish to go much further behind because the period of Imam Ali alayhi salam we have discussed in 1999. In the year 2000, we have discussed the period of Imam Hassan alayhi salam. During the intervening period, there was correspondence that passed between Imam Hussein alayhi salam and Muawiyah, which I hope I will refer to in the nights to come. But starting then from the Rajab of 60th year after Hijrah, that was the time Muawiyah died. And when Muawiyah died, he had left a will for his son Yazid. Well, according to Majlisi alayhi rahma in Bihar, he also spoke to his son before his son went away on a hunting trip. You will be surprised to hear that when Muawiyah died, this son of his, who was to inherit his wealth and his total empire, had gone hunting. And indeed, despite the fact that he heard of the death of his father, he did not come back to Damascus until 3 days after the burial of Muawiyah. So for 3 days after people had buried Muawiyah, Yazid was not to be seen. And it is when he comes after 3 days that people gather to give him condolences and made his bayah. But Muawiyah, before he died, in his will, appointed Yazid as his successor. Not only did he appoint Yazid as his successor, but in his will he says that I am leaving all my wealth to you. But I am not only leaving the wealth to you, I am also leaving the Khilafah to you and the entire empire to you. Now, the first question that arises as a matter of constitutional practice is, Was that within the competence of Muawiyah? Was there any authority at all? And I'm not talking from the Shiite point of view at all, as I said. Purely from the constitutional perspective, was there any authority in Muawiyah to take that step? Abdullah bin Amr, the son of the second caliph, Umar bin Khattab, criticized that. And he was answered that, oh, your father, Umar bin Khattab, came into Khilafah in exactly the same way. The Holy Prophet said that if he appointed Imam Ali alayhi salam to the succession of the Holy Prophet, it was on the commandment of Allah. And may I take this opportunity to clarify that at the outset, we Shias have only one principle in mind, and we consistently follow that principle and only that principle. And I've discussed this at length with you in 1999, so I will not consume your time except to remind you the principle, not the proofs regarding that principle. You will recall I put forward 14 proofs in the year 1999. Tonight, just to recap on that principle, the principle on which we accuse that this Khalifa is really the Khalifa of the religion. He is the head of religion. And if he is indeed the defender of the faith, then his appointment can only be made by him who brought that faith. And the person and that faith, the entity that taught the faith, is Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala through his messengers. And Allah alone has the right to appoint a caliph. Indeed, we discussed, and only to remind you cursorily, that even when Nabi Musa was asked to appoint a khalifa, that order came from Allah, and the appointee was nominated by Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala himself, not Nabi Musa. And that is the basis on which the Holy Prophet appointed Imam Ali alayhi salam as his successor. And indeed, that is the basis on which each Imam then appointed his successor before his martyrdom. Well, that is the principle on which we proceed. But we can understand that other people did not follow that principle, and we have discussed how they diverted from it. Well, the first diversion, as you remember, was in Saqifah, when it was alleged that people gathered, the Muhajireen and the Ansar, and they elected. We have already discussed that there was no election of any shape or kind whatsoever, and I will not repeat those arguments tonight, merely mention them so that you recall them. But that is how Abu Bakr came in. And then Abu Bakr makes the will, which you remember, he dictated to Uthman. And indeed, he went unconscious. Abu Bakr went unconscious. When he gathers consciousness, he asks Uthman, "I was dictating the will?" Uthman says, "Yes, I know what you wanted to dictate, and I have already completed the will." So Abu Bakr says, "What have you written in the will?" God knows whether Abu Bakr was then conscious to hear what Uthman was saying or not. But Uthman said, "I have said that it is your wish that you are appointing Umar to succeed you." And this is how Umar came in. And then Umar appointed a council. This is how Uthman came in. Imam Ali alayhi salam then came in by sheer public demand. The public grabbed him. He said, "I don't want your khilafah." Grabbed him and took him forcibly to the mosque and forcibly put him on the minbar and made his bayah. He was brought into office by public demand. After him, Imam Hassan alayhi salam was appointed by the will of Allah. Muawiyah usurped authority. And now, for the first time, he is making an appointment of his son, as it were, changing the entire concept of the Khilafah from one with religious sanctity to one of a worldly political kingdom, that he passes away with the authority to appoint his son. Even that practice did not last, because Yazid appointed his son, who was in about 40 days toppled by Marwan bin Hakam. But then Marwan bin Hakam was succeeded by his sons. But sons, one after the other, like the Saudi regime of today. So you can see how different patterns flow. The question is, when Muawiyah appointed Yazid, on what basis did he appoint? On what constitutional principle did he act? Because there was no authority whatsoever for appointment of a son in that way. And that is why, when the son of Umar was challenged, when he challenged the appointment of Yazid, and we shall see this in a few minutes this evening, he was told that your father came into office that way. Abu Bakr appointed him, and he became the Khalif. If Abu Bakr could appoint Umar, why can't Muawiyah appoint Yazid? But you can see the game that was going on. Not only the informality, but the absolute destitution of sanctity of faith. And that is our complaint in respect of such nominations. Immediately, Abdullah bin Umar reported saying, yes, Abu Bakr did appoint my father, but he did not appoint his son. And that Abdullah bin Umar pointed out was the vital difference between the two. That son was not qualified for various reasons to which we shall come later in the evening. However, Muawiyah takes that step. When Yazid comes to the palace after 3 days of the burial of his father, the people of Damascus went and made his bay'ah. They did not query. And this is where Imam Hussein alayhi salam's objection arises. Indeed, the entire people of Syria made bay'ah of Yazid. Only two categories of people did not instantly. The people of Medina and the people of Kufa. Those are the only two groups that remained aloof from instant bay'ah. It became important therefore that their bay'ah should be taken, their allegiance should be sought. Well, even with regard to that point, Muawiyah left instructions for Yazid, saying, it will not be difficult for you, using our normal means, to obtain allegiance of the Muslims. And you know the normal means, we have discussed them before. 1997, I think we discussed them in the mini Ashura, after the first Ashura. Three main things they use. Money was the first. Bribe the people. And maybe I would not have been able to complain as strongly as I do if they bribed them from their own earnings. They bribed the Ummah from Baytul Mal. They used the wealth of the Muslims to bribe Muslims to do that which is wrong. That is the aspect which is totally unacceptable and intolerable. However, that was their first method of doing things. The second threats to kill, and people have been killed only because they did not follow the line. And three, lock them up, imprison them, and torture them during imprisonment until they follow the line. So he says normal method is all you need. But you will have to be careful with three people. First is Abdullah bin Umar, the one we mentioned, the son of the second Khalid. But he is your man. He is our man. And you do not have to be very much concerned about him. As we shall see in the course of this evening. The second is Abdullah bin Zubair. Abdullah bin Zubair is a man of ambition. But he is a man of machinations and maneuvers. And that, as you know, is not where dignity and honor lies. A person who will act stealthily, who will act secretly, who will not act above board, is not a man of honor. This is how Muawiyah describes Abdullah bin Zubair. We have discussed his father Zubair in the context of the Battle of Jamal and discussed him at length. This is the son now who was in Jamal and witnessed where truth lay. However, of him Muawiyah says in that will to Yazid as set out by Allama Majlisi in Biharul Anwar, and Abu Mahdaf also sets it out. He says that Abdullah bin Zubair fighting with him will be like the fox fighting with the dog. All the trickery of a fox is how Abdullah bin Zubair is described. And so, beware of him and track him. Abdullah bin Zubair, as you know, man of ambition, ultimately even fought with the help of Mukhtar. And we should perhaps discuss this when we discuss Mukhtar after the 12 days of Muharram, when we start discussing his struggle to avenge the death of Imam Hussein alayhi salam. With the help of Mukhtar, Abdullah bin Zubair takes over command of power in Makkah, and then, having taken over command with the help of Mukhtar, abandons Mukhtar altogether, indeed even imprisons him. That is the Abdullah bin Zubair we are talking about. So you can see, it is not with him a game of religion or principle. It is a game of power and politics. But the third name he gives is of Husayn ibn Ali, salawatullahi wa salamu alayhima. And of him, Muawiyah says, O my son, treat him with dignity and with respect. This is now perhaps the worst enemy of Imam Husayn alayhi salam. And this is how he describes the character of Imam Husayn alayhi salam. What wonder we spent two nights discussing the character of Imam Husayn alayhi salam. He says, treat him with honor and dignity because he is the last survivor of the household of the Holy Prophet. And he is himself a man of piety and knowledge. But it is important that he should not be overlooked, and bay'ah from him should be organized in a sensible way, showing him dignity all the time, because people will be swayed, particularly those of Medina and Kufa, will be swayed by what he will do with him. So that is the background Muawiyah leaves for Yazid. Yazid, within days of coming into power, well, within 10 days or so, because Muawiyah's death, we have two dates. We have the 15th of Rajab or the 22nd of Rajab in the year 60th after Hijrah. And within a matter of a week or 10 days, Yazid sends a letter to the governor in Medina, who was an appointee of Muawiyah, Walid bin Utbah bin Abu Sufyan, and says that Muawiyah has died. And so ask for bay'ah for me generally from all the people of Medina. And then sends an appendix to that letter, a special letter saying, and in particular, get bay'ah from four people. He adds one. Says Abdullah bin Amr, Abdullah bin Zubair, Husayn ibn Ali, and Abdurrahman bin Abu Bakr, that is the son of the first Caliph. Get bay'ah from them. And for them, he says, if any one of them refuses to make bay'ah, chop his head off. Those are the words, the exact words. Chop his head off and send me his head instantly to Damascus. So you can see he is totally, totally misconstruing or disobeying the instructions from Muawiyah. That is the letter he sends. When this letter reaches Walid, Walid is disconcerted and is slow to act because he does not know how to approach these top people, the people in the top hierarchy of the community, and confront them in this way, particularly Imam Husayn alayhi salam. He speaks to Marwan bin Hakam, who was, as you know, the advisor of Uthman, and after Uthman, as we discussed Marwan's role in Jamal, ultimately he became secretary to Muawiyah. He was then in Medina, sent there specially by Muawiyah. And he says, these are the orders from the Caliph. He is Amir al-Mu'mineen, as he called Yazid, and you must obey these instructions. And if you do not obey these instructions, then evil will be the consequence for you. The same trick of threats and trickery used on the Ummah as a whole is also used on their appointee. And Walid trembles and indeed immediately sends a message to these four personalities to come over to his government house. When this messenger goes out, he finds that strangely all four of them were in Masjid al-Nabawi, the Imam Husayn alayhi salam being at the gravesite of the Holy Prophet and reciting prayers at the gravesite of the Holy Prophet. I mention this because objection is today taken when we recite prayers at the gravesites, when in fact there can be no objection at all, because prayers are not said to that dead man. It is fanciful for anybody to suggest that we pray to the dead person. We don't. We only pray to Allah, because each word we utter says that in clear words and effect. I will not take more of your time on that, only to make the point that this is where they found Imam Husayn alayhi salam, and no companion of the Prophet ever objected to that course. In fact, there were companions of the Prophet who actually did that themselves. However, the message is conveyed and the three gather together. Imam Hussein alayhi salam continued with his prayers. They all come round to him and sit round him and say, and Abdullah bin Zubair is the one who starts talking, says, Yanna Rasulullah, we have received the message that we three are required to attend the government house because Walid has a message for us from Damascus, and we see that you two were approached. And Imam Hussein alayhi salam says, yes. Nobody knew what had happened in Damascus. Even the news of the death of Muawiyah had not reached Medina. You can imagine how the politics of the time was run. That even when the Khalif dies in Damascus, Medina, the center of Islam, of the Islamic Commonwealth of the time, people were not aware. So they come and ask Imam Hussein alayhi salam. And Imam Hussein alayhi salam says, I have information that Muawiyah has died. And I therefore surmise that we four are being called so that our allegiance is sought on behalf of Yazid by his governor. And immediately they turned around and said to Imam Hussein alayhi salam, so what do you propose to do? And Imam Hussein alayhi salam, without a second thought, says, O Abdullah bin Zubair, what do you expect me to do other than outright reject any suggestion that I make allegiance to Yazid? And Abdullah bin Zubair says, Janna Rasulillah, that is what I was thinking too. But you can see that while he was thinking that, there was that lack of courage, lack of conviction as a Muslim to set out the answer that was so obvious. But Abdullah bin Zubair, as you know, had political disadvantages, the disadvantages of the career and conduct of his father Zubair, in Jamal in particular, in the way he sided with Aisha. However, he says, I did not wish to make bay'ah. I am not sure, and I say no more than that, because I do not wish to take your time on that discussion, as we have more important things to discuss. I am not sure whether the refusal by Abdullah bin Zubair to make the bay'ah of Yazid was purely political or had any religious significance to it. The fact that he subsequently fought for that very khilafah by a battle, killing people in Makkah so that he obtained that khilafah, has much to say against it. However, Imam Hussein alayhi salam says, I do not see how any sensible Muslim can make the bay'ah of Yazid. That was the response of Imam Hussein to Abdullah bin Zubair. And I take you into these details so that you can have a perspective of why the people of the time did not move. You can see their leaders, the eminent personalities, selected, handpicked by Yazid to make his bay'ah, react in this way. And when Abdullah bin Zubair turns to Abdullah bin Umar and says, what is your stand? Abdullah bin Umar says, I shall never make bay'ah of Yazid. But he was a compatriot. He was so close to them, as we will see when we discuss Mukhtar. When Mukhtar was imprisoned by Abdullah bin Ubaidullah bin Ziyad and had no hope of being released, he wrote a letter to Abdullah bin Umar, because Abdullah bin Umar had married the sister of Mukhtar. I do not wish to go into those details because we shall discuss them inshallah on the 13th eve of Muharram. He had married, Abdullah bin Umar had married the sister of Mukhtar, and Mukhtar writes a letter to Abdullah bin Umar saying, can you please intercede on my behalf, write a letter to Yazid so that Yazid orders Ubaidullah bin Ziyad to release me. And Abdullah bin Umar writes a letter to Yazid, and Yazid, pursuant to that letter, releases Mukhtar. Orders Ubaidullah bin Ziyad, who was reluctant to release Mukhtar, because Mukhtar was a powerful Shiite entity who politically should not have been released at that time. But Yazid still takes the step of ordering the release of Mukhtar entirely because Abdullah bin Umar writes that letter. That depicts the association between Abdullah bin Umar and Yazid. But Abdullah bin Umar on that occasion says, I will not make the bay'ah. Nothing new. As I've already discussed with you, Abdullah bin Umar did not make even the bay'ah of Imam Ali alayhi salam. Indeed, he did not even go to help Imam Hussein alayhi salam. And of Abdullah bin Umar, the whole situation is so ambiguous, so equivocal. I say this because, and let me say this tonight so that we save time in days to come, as it is pertinent to what we are discussing. In Makkah it was, ultimately, Imam Hussein alayhi salam, as you know, went to Makkah, so did Abdullah bin Umar and so did Abdullah bin Zubair. And once these people, including Abu Bakr bin Abdullah bin Abu Bakr and other companions of the Prophet, were sitting near Rukn al-Yamani in Makkah. And those of you who have just from Hajj can exactly envisage what I'm talking about. They were sitting near Rukn al-Yamani and Imam Hussein alayhi salam passed from there. And the moment Imam Hussein alayhi salam passed, everybody said, Assalamu alaikum, Ibn Rasulullah. The rule was that Imam Hussein alayhi salam should make salam, and Imam Hussein alayhi salam says, leave me to say that when I approach you. And Imam Hussein, and this is the personality and the character of Imam Hussein that we discussed, particularly that we should say salam alaykum. When he reaches the group, he says, Assalamu alaikum. And they say, Wa alayka salam, Yabda Rasulullah. When everybody replies, Abdullah bin Umar did not. When everybody had said what they wanted to say, and Imam Hussein alayhi salam continued his walk passing through them, Abdullah bin Umar says, Wa assalamu alayka ibn Rasulillah. Imam Hussein alayhi salam now turns back and says, Wa alayka salam, and moves on. And then everybody was silent. Why does Abdullah bin Umar exclude himself from others in giving the salam to Imam Hussein alayhi salam? Hence do I say that this salam we make to Imam Hussein alayhi salam is such a noble thing to do and such an important thing to do, including the salam after namaz, because that also is a salam. If we only value that, we will have five salams to Aba Abdullah every day. And Abdullah bin Umar, this is the son of the second Khalif, says, are you surprised that I did not join you? Because he did feel that the others might feel that he was acting aloof. They say, yes, we wanted to ask you, but we didn't know exactly how to proceed. He says, do you want me to tell you who is the person living on earth today who is more respected in the heavens and by the angels of heaven than by respectable man of the world? That is how Abdullah bin Umar put it. And they said, yes. And he says, that is Hussein ibn Ali. That he is more respected by the eminent angels in the heavens than the most respectable of men on earth. That is the level that he put. And I wanted that as the angels send salam to him, I should also make an exclusive salam to him when I made ziyarah of his face today. That is what Abdullah bin Umar, and I am not citing Majlisi there. This is Khwarizmi stating in Maqtal al-Husayn that this is the eminence with which Abdullah bin Umar saw Imam Hussein alayhi. Can you hesitate to accept that angels today? I say this because I don't know how much we can cover on Shab-e Ashur. So that is our agenda for that night. How can you wonder that angels today descend to the grave of Imam Hussein alayhi salam? And as one group descends, the other group turns to them and say, where are you going? And when they say that we are going to the grave of Aba Abdullah, they say, pray for us under that kubba that we too should be able to go to Karbala, to the grave of Imam Hussein alayhi salam. That is the prayer of those angels. And what wonder that prayer should take place, because on the first night, you remember, I discussed Fitrus, and Fitrus had lost his wings for delaying in obeying Allah. He lost his wings when he comes to congratulate the Holy Prophet and asks that his wings be restored. His wings are restored only because he comes to congratulate the Holy Prophet on the birth of Imam Hussein alayhi salam. And when Fitrus gets back his wings, he says to the Holy Prophet, in gratitude for this gesture from you, I shall ever see that every salam to Abu Abdullah al-Hussein, I personally pick from the lips of his followers and lovers and reach to Imam Hussein alayhi salam. What wonder that Abdullah bin Umar should say that then? And indeed, we even get this from the lips of those who were not friends of Imam Hussein alayhi salam. His father, Umar bin Khattab, never accepted the position of Imam Hussein. He himself did not make bayah either of Imam Ali or of Imam Hassan or of Imam Hussein. And yet these are the words by which he describes Imam Hussein alayhi salam. He turns to Imam Hussein alayhi salam that night and says, I too will not make bayah of Yazid. So does Abdurrahman bin Abu Bakr. Abdullah bin Zubair then turns to Imam Hussein alayhi salam and says, Yabna Rasulillah, I understand you would say that you will not make the bayah of Yazid. But what will you do? Will you go tonight to meet him? And Imam Hussain alayhi salam says, definitely yes. Definitely yes. As I said, maneuvers and machinations are no actions of a masoom. He acts above board and he acts clear. Imam Hussain says, yes, I will go. So Abdullah bin Zubair said, but he will ask for bayah. But you can see why Abdullah bin Zubair is shaking, does not even have the confidence to go to government house, does not know what to do, seeking guidance from Imam Hussein. But he doesn't have the courage or the conviction or the faith or the piety of Imam Hussein alayhi salam. Those are the criteria that make a man. As I said the other day, it is our inner spirit that makes us, not our outward complexion or strength. It is the inner strength that makes the man. Abdullah bin Zubair asked Imam Hussein alayhi salam, if you go tonight, he will ask for bayah. It is clear, he will ask for bayah for Yazid. It is also clear that you will say no. If he asks for bayah and you say no, he will kill you. You will be alone in that government house. And what will happen if he just kills you that night? Imam Hussein alayhi salam, of course, had thought of this centuries ago. He turns to Abdullah bin Umar and says, to Abdullah bin Zubair and says, Abdullah, I will not go alone. I will not go alone. I will take my Shia companions of the highest trust, of the highest trust. And you can see that if there is any person of the highest trust, that was Abu Fadl al-Abbas. Because that is the first person he took with him. And the first person who entered the government house when Imam raised his voice. And the second was his son, Ali Akbar. Historians differ on the number of people Imam Hussein alayhi salam took. Khawarizmi says there were 30 people, 30 eminent shias of Imam Hussein alayhi salam whom he took that night. And indeed, when he went in, he told these people, you are not invited, so I will not take you inside. But when you hear that I raise my voice, get your swords out of your sheath. Those were the orders. Don't even enter like that. Enter with your naked swords out of their sheaths. And do nothing, touch nobody, until you receive orders from me. And this is how they acted. Imam Hussain alayhi salam visits Walid, keeps his word, visits Walid. And as you know, and I will not detain you on those facts that are so well known to you, Walid says Muawiyah has died. All that Imam Hussein alayhi salam says is Inna lillah wa inna ilayhi raji'un. He answers that, and it's politically, it was such a difficult situation, because we hear these things constantly. We unfortunately do not reflect. I said yesterday, every step of Imam Hussein alayhi salam has a lesson behind it. When we are told that somebody has died, we tend immediately to say, may Allah forgive him. May Allah forgive him. May Allah's mercy be with him. These are common words of a Muslim, spoken for a Muslim who has died. One would have expected that Imam Hussein alayhi salam, out of habit, may have said so, because that was the custom. He doesn't. All he says is, repeats that kalima of istirja'. Inna lillahi wa inna ilayhi raji'un. In other words, telling everybody there. Because when Imam Hussain alayhi salam entered, he saw Marwan sitting with Walid. Marwan would not trust Walid to be on his own. But it is an interesting meeting. A meeting you know well off, so I don't take you into the facts. But these points that arise from that meeting. Imam Hussain alayhi salam says, Inna lillahi wa inna ilayhi raji'un. And all that Walid does is to show him the letter from Yazid. I asked the question today, 14 centuries later, why didn't Walid have the courage even to tell Imam Hussain that I want bay'ah from you for Yazid? Do you hesitate to ask that which is legitimately due to you? But the fact that you ask, but you hesitate to ask, plainly and openly shows you yourself doubt whether you have the right to ask for that which you are asking for. Walid gives the letter to Imam, the appendix that I mentioned, to Imam Hussain alayhi salam. Imam Hussain alayhi salam reads it and throws it back to Walid. And Walid says, without an answer. So Walid says, Yabna Rasulillah, what is your response? What do I say to Yazid? Those words, what is your response? What do I say to Yazid? Clearly means Walid himself did not expect Imam Hussain alayhi salam to make bay'ah, and the question is why? Why did he not? They knew they were doing what they were doing was inherently wrong, inherently unjustified. However, Imam Hussain alayhi salam turns around and says, oh Walid, you have such an important message from Yazid, from your Amir. You call me at this time of the night within these four walls of the government house to ask for my allegiance when my allegiance is said in the letter to be so important that I am the grandson of the Holy Prophet. So if my allegiance is so important as the grandson of the Holy Prophet, the Ummah perhaps following what I will say, isn't it right that you should ask for my bay'ah when the Ummah can see what my response is going to be? Then the Ummah can see that you are asking for my bay'ah. What important words of the Imam. And they can also see what response I give to it. Call this meeting in broad daylight in an open field. We say to Imam Hussain alayhi salam this night, Mawla, we can see that what you had in sight for replying to that question was the ground of Karbala at the time of Asr. A plain open ground with the sun shining, everybody being able to hear what your answers were. And we discussed those answers of Imam Hussain just two nights back in his last couplets before he breathed his last. Walid, unable to meet that argument, says, yes, Yanna Rasulillah, I accept what you say. So how do we proceed with it? And Imam Hussain alayhi salam says, Walid, think about it for tonight and tomorrow, and I will also think about it. And we can then meet and discuss. Full stop. He did not say we can meet and discuss the venue, because the venue was going to be agreed with her, not with Walid. He did not discuss the time, because that was going to be Asr of Yawmul Ashura. What does Walid know about it? He left, he stood up to go. Marwan then stands up and says, oh Walid, don't let Hussain go. So Imam Hussain alayhi salam stops. He does not go. Looks at Marwan. And Marwan says to Walid, oh Walid, if you let Hussain go tonight, you will not get the bay'ah of Hussain until a number of heads will roll on both sides, his side and our side. So Walid turns around to Marwan and says, so what do you want me to do? And Marwan says, tell Hussain that he either gives allegiance to Yazid now or top of his head, as Yazid says in the letter. Walid would not have the courage to answer that. Walid wouldn't even know how to deal with a machination from Marwan of that nature. But Imam Hussain alayhi salam instantly gave the bold answer and says, oh Marwan, who is going to kill me? You or Walid? by God, he swears, Wallah, you are lying if you say that you dare touch me, let alone kill me. And Walid would be lying if he says he can touch me or kill me. And you would both be lying if you say that you can both get together and kill me. You can see the confidence of Imam Hussain alayhi salam in that response. In other words, he was saying that I am not to be treated with threats. That is a matter, that is a statement, a principle that Imam Hussain alayhi salam was there making and was telling them, that don't dare treat the Ummah in this way. Because this is how the Ummah had been treated all along, throughout the period of Muawiyah. And Imam Hussain alayhi salam had written a letter to Muawiyah in the 52nd and 53rd Hijrah saying, Muawiyah, your treating the Ummah with threats makes you answerable to Allah. And for each threat, you will answer Allah separately and severally. And for each zulm on each day of each person wrongly kept in your imprisonment, you will have to answer Allah separately for each day. The Geneva Convention on Tortures. Yes, we have the Geneva Convention on Tortures, on human rights, and we are proud of it today, that we now have the Geneva Protocol, and countries have signed that protocol, they have signed that protocol, and most of them infringe it by locking up people in their cells without trial at all. Imam Hussain alayhi salam made that principle centuries ago, saying to Muawiyah in writing, and that letter exists, it's extant, that for every single day, every single Muslim who is kept in incarnation without trial, without proof, the Khaliq who has ordered his incarnation will be personally responsible on the Day of Judgment. And this is what he tells both of them then. But Hazrat Abbas alayhi salam, hearing the voice of his brother raised, enters with his sword, and so does Shahzada Ali Akbar come in. And when the family of Abdul Muttalib had barged into the government house, Walid got threatened. He didn't know how to react. And Imam Hussain alayhi salam just turns to Abbas and says, Abbas, this is not Karbala, my brother. This is not Karbala. I asked Imam Hussain alayhi salam, did you even allow Abbas to fight on the day of Ashura in Karbala? You did not even allow him to fight then. They walked out. Let us pause here to see what the others did. Abdullah bin Umar and Abdurrahman bin Abu Bakr locked themselves up in their homes. They just locked themselves in. In other words, they imprisoned themselves. That is the courage of these personalities. When Walid sent his people to check, kept knocking the door, neither of them opened their doors. And it was an impression was given, there was nobody in the house. Abdullah bin Zubair eloped that very night. And how did he elope? He went to Makkah. Yes, he went to Makkah because he had asked Imam Hussain alayhi salam, but if you have to leave Medina, where would you go? And Imam Hussain alayhi salam said, I would go to Makkah, because for that place it is safe. وَمَنْ دَخَلَهَا آمِنَا, he who enters the sanctuary is safe. So this is where I will go. And we shall discuss that tomorrow, inshallah. So Abdullah bin Zubair had the idea, but not the courage to go to Makkah by the recognized highway. He went through stealthy ways, through forests, through deserts, in order to reach Makkah unseen and undetected. When Walid came to know that Abdullah bin Zubair had eloped, he sent a garrison of 30 people. 30 people were sent out to look for Abdullah bin Zubair on the road to Makkah, because he received intelligence that Abdullah bin Zubair had fled to Makkah. Nobody could find Abdullah bin Zubair. He had reached Makkah safely without being seen by the men of Walid. However, the next day, more important than that, when Imam Hussain alayhi salam left the government house, Marwan, and this is perhaps the most important point I want to make this evening, Marwan asks Walid, oh Walid, why did you disobey me?
So Walid says, how did I do that? He said, well, I ordered you before Hussein came in that you must not compromise on terms with him, and you must not allow him to make arguments. He is a genius. Look at the argument he gave you, that this should have been done in public, and the public should know that you are seeking bay'ah. Don't you realize the political significance of that? And don't you realize the political significance of his saying that he wants to give the answer in public? But that is precisely what Imam Hussein alayhi salam did not want done, to give bay'ah in private. Then anything could have been said about him. Then anything could have been said about him. Abdullah bin Zubair, sorry, Abdullah bin Umar and Abu Bakr bin, and Abdurrahman bin Abu Bakr did not make bay'ah of Yazid that night or even subsequently. Yes, Yazid announced in Damascus that Abdullah bin Umar had already made his bay'ah and Abdurrahman bin Abu Bakr had already made his bay'ah. He announced that publicly from his throne in the court of Damascus. If such lies could be uttered so publicly, and Abdullah bin Umar not objecting to it, and Abdurrahman bin Abu Bakr not objecting to it, what would they not have said of Imam Hussein alayhi salam if that conversation was allowed to proceed on that night? But when Marwan asks Walid this question, the answer of Walid is of momentous significance. He turns round to Marwan and said, if I had asked for his bay'ah, was it not clear that he would have said no? Marwan says, yes, it was clear he would have said no. So Walid says, what did you want me to do? He said, chop off his head. And Walid says, oh Marwan, you wanted me to make my this hand bloody with the blood of that sacred man, the grandson of the Holy Prophet, the one whom the heavens and the earth respect? Oh Marwan, if I had taken the life of Hussein this night, what face would I show the Holy Prophet on the Day of Judgment? I can tell you that if I had done that, I would have lost both this world and the hereafter. What we were discussing last night, that Jibreel said, what the Holy Prophet said, authority, that those words were known by the people who lived there. Walid bin Utbah bin Abu Sufyan knew those words. And he turns round to Marwan and says, if I had done that, I would have had no face on the Day of Judgment. Exactly the words Imam Hussein alayhi salam told the people on the Day of Ashura and told Umar ibn Sa'd, la'natullah alayh. Well, doesn't this prove beyond question that that demand for bay'ah was illegitimate, was improper, because the very person who demanded it said, I could not have enforced it. I could not have enforced it if it was said no, because this is the grandson of the Prophet, holy blood, which I would not see a drop off on my hand. But that is good so far as it goes. Let us look at the response of Marwan. Because if that was not correct, and if Marwan was right in telling Walid, why don't you take the bay'ah, why don't you kill Hussein, and you are not right, he should have said it then. Marwan's answer, and this is reported unanimously. All Sunnite works report that, Khazami reports it that way, Sheikh Mufid reports it that way, everybody, Abu Makhnaf reports it that way. Marwan's answer to Walid says, yes, if that is what you thought, you were right in doing what you did. Well, you can now see that even Marwan knew that seeking allegiance of Imam Hussein alayhi salam was illegitimate. What right did they have to kill Imam Hussein alayhi salam in Karbala? And what was Imam Hussein alayhi salam to do other than in the circumstances to refuse the bay'ah? The question became beyond controversy. But the next day, that night by the way, was a Friday night when Imam Hussein, according to Sheikh Mufid alayhi rahmah, Khwarizmi says it was a Monday night. But majority of historians say it was Friday night, and it was the eve of the 27th of Rajab, in 3 days before the end of Rajab, as they put it, 27th of Rajab. The next day, the day of 27th of Rajab, Imam Hussein alayhi salam went out. That night, as you know, and I will not take your time repeating it, he went to the graveside of the Prophet and the graveside of his mother and his brother. and met maybe Zainab alayhi salam, but I will not take it through those. Let us look at the political issue that arose. He meets Marwan that day, and Marwan says, Ya Rasulullah, I've been looking for you, and it's my good luck, my good fortune that I have met you in this alley of Medina. I would wanted to speak to you privately. So Imam Hussain alayhi salam says, yes Marwan, speak to me privately. What do you want to do? He says, I want to give you some sincere advice. And Imam Hussain alayhi salam laughs, says, Marwan, you and sincere advice to me? And those words were so glorious. One would have expected Marwan to back off, but he didn't. You can see of what metal Marwan was made. He turns around and says, yes, Yabda Rasulullah, I want to advise you quite sincerely that you must make the bayah of Yazid. So Imam Hussain alayhi salam says, and why should I do so? He says, because if you do so, it will be for your benefit in this world and in the hereafter. Why didn't you tell Walid that? When Walid said, look, if I kill Hussain, it will be a disadvantage to me, it will be injurious to me in this world and the hereafter. He didn't turn around and disagree with Walid. He comes to advise Imam Hussain alayhi salam that it will be better for you in this world and the hereafter. And Imam Hussain alayhi salam says immediately, Inna lillah wa inna ilayhi raji'un wa li islami salam. In other words, what is this? What is this ayah recited when somebody dies? What is that for? Imam Hussain alayhi salam saying clearly, Wali Islami Salam, and if I make bayah of Yazid, then it will be Salam. In other words, Khuda Hafiz to Islam. Then Islam will be dead, it will go. That portrays why Imam Hussain alayhi salam did not make the bayah of Yazid. And Marwan gets a shock, just looks at Imam Hussain. Imam Hussain says, Marwan, I come from a family in which the angels have descended day and night. I come from the family, Ma'adin al-Risala. I come from a family, a household, which is the repository of the Wahi of Allah. The revelations of Allah have come. All the ayahs of Quran have been revealed in our house, Marwan. And we are people of whom Allah has said, إِنَّمَا يُرِيدُ اللَّهُ لِيُذْهِبَ أَنْكُمُ الرِّجْزَ أَهْلُ الْبَيْتِ وَيُطَهِّرَكُمْ تَطْهِيرًا. Imam Hussain alayhi salam repeats that ayah to Marwan. Marwan does not say, oh Hussain, this ayah does not belong to you. He does not say that. Imam Hussain alayhi salam repeats that and says, on the other hand, Yazid is an adulterer. Yazid is a drunkard. Yazid is a fornicator. Yazid is a fasiq. In other words, open sinner. He is not even ashamed to sin. And worst of it all, hard to appreciate, he says, worst of it all, his couplets denying the existence of Allah and denying the wahi makes him totally incompetent and disqualified for that post. And then uses words that have become memorable in history. He says, O Marwan, kamithli la yubayu mithlah. A person of my kind cannot make bay'ah of the person of his kind. And that concluded the conversation between Marwan and Imam Hussain alayhi salam, and Imam Hussain alayhi salam prepared for his journey to Makkah. The moment this is known, and pardon me rushing you through this, the moment this is known, a number of people of course arrived. The only one we have time to deal with is Muhammad al-Hanafiyyah. And I wish to deal with Muhammad al-Hanafiyyah because next year, if Allah will so will, and we will have the chance of discussing together the study of the fourth Imam alayhi salam, we can connect Muhammad ibn Hanafiyyah from where we stop tonight. Muhammad ibn Hanafiyyah comes to Imam Hussain alayhi salam and says, oh my brother, I hear you are leaving Medina and you have prepared yourself for Makkah. What a significant question. If Muhammad ibn Hanafiyyah had learned of this, means the word has gone round. Imam Hussain alayhi salam does not take that stealthy way to Makkah. He does not hide to Makkah. In other words, he does not run away to Makkah. He departs. He makes a hijrah from Medina to Makkah. That allegation cannot be made of him. He lives with dignity and with honor.
Muhammad ibn Hanafiyyah says, "Oh brother, I have come to learn that you are leaving Medina for Makkah." And Imam Hussain alayhi salam says, "Oh my dear brother, what else can I do? Do you have any other suggestion for me?" And Muhammad ibn Hanafiyyah says, "Yes, my brother, I agree. I've heard Yazid has asked for your bay'ah. How can you make bay'ah of him?"
Muhammad ibn Hanafiyyah did not make the bay'ah either.
How can you make bay'ah of him? It is out of the question. And I appreciate you cannot stay in Medina if he is seeking bay'ah from you and you do not give it to him. And what better place than Makkah? Because there is Aman. But oh my brother, I do not see that there is Aman left for you there. Indeed, Muhammad Hanafiyyah himself lived in Makkah for a number of years only to receive Aman, and ultimately had to leave after the time of Abdullah bin Zubair. He also migrated from Makkah. However, he says there may not be Aman. So Imam Hussain alayhi salam says, "Then where do you suggest I go?" And Muhammad ibn Hanafiyyah says, "You can ask the people there. If you find they are with you, you can stay there. Otherwise, oh my brother, leave Makkah too and move from mountain to mountain and see where you can get peace and quiet on this earth." Imam Hussain alayhi salam says to Muhammad ibn Hanafiyyah, "Oh my brother, if I dig a hole seven graves down, still Yazid will unearth me and kill me, because Sha Allah an yarani khatila." Then Muhammad ibn Hanafiyyah says to Imam Hussain alayhi salam, "Oh my brother, if you must go to Makkah, don't take Zainab and Kulthum. I have heard about taking them, but don't take them with you, because I know what these people can do. If for any reason they murder you, they might even enslave these pious daughters of this Tahira mother of yours, Fatima al-Zahra salamullahi alayha. Don't take them." And Imam Hussain alayhi salam, what would he explain to Muhammad Hanafiyyah in detail when time was short and he was leaving for that journey? He said, "Oh my brother, Sha Allah an yarahunna sabaya. It is already in the decreed, in the destiny of Allah, that he should see them made prisoners by Yazid and the cronies of Yazid." And then Imam Hussain alayhi salam, this does a memorable act. He writes a will, and this document exists till today. And in that will, he says he's making a will to his brother Muhammad ibn Hanafiyyah before he leaves for this journey on this migration. And in that will, he first sets out the kalima, showing that as he departs, he is cognizant of the existence of Allah and the judgment of Allah. And in it he says, وَالْجَنَّةُ حَقٌّ وَالنَّارُ حَقٌّ وَسُؤَالُ مُنْكَرٍ وَنَكِيرٍ حَقٌّ. He says all that in his will. And then he says, إِنِّي لَمْ أَخْرُجْ أَشَرًا وَلَا مَطَرًا وَلَا مُفْسِدًا وَلَا ظُلْمًا إِنَّمَا خَرَجْتُ لِطَالَبِ الْإِصْلَاحِ فِي أُمَّةِ جَدِّ رَسُولِ اللَّهِ وشيئة أبي علي بن أبي طالب صلوات الله وسلامه عليه. I have taken your time to tell you the Arabic words, for these are the exact words of Imam Hussain alayhi salam. In other words, he set out his blueprint for his journey in writing before he left, so that historians do not twist and turn on it. How can anybody then say that he went out for any reason other than simply the pleasure of Allah, as we discussed from his couplet two nights back? Even Charles Dickens, when asked, "Did Hussein go to Karbala in order to fight for his princehood?" That was the word the questioner asked, for his princehood. And Charles Dickens says, "Absolutely not." Immediate answer, "Absolutely not. If he had, he would not have taken his wives and his children with him." Immediate answer from an objective person who was not even a Muslim. But Imam Hussain alayhi salam's words in that will say to his brother, "Oh my brother, I do not leave out of arrogance. It is not that I am not making the bay'ah of Yazid because I am the grandson of the Prophet. No, not out of arrogance, because that is the command of Allah. Nor am I doing so
nor am I doing so entirely because I've become obstinate. Not out of that either. Nor am I doing so, mufsida, nor am I doing so to create dissension amongst the Muslim commonwealth. And finally, nor am I doing so to do injustice, zulma, to do the slightest injustice to any person at all. I am setting out on this journey because li talabi, I am seeking islah. I'm seeking reformation of the ummah of my grandfather and of the shias of my father Ali ibn Abi Talib. He sets out his manifesto. That is a letter, that is a will, a writing he gives to Muhammad ibn Hanafiya. A writing of that kind that he sets out. Again, already when he is in Karbala, when he has already landed in Karbala, this time it is a letter to his beloved friend Habib ibn Mawahir. And he writes a letter to him, Ya Habibi, Ya Habib, oh my dear friend Habib, I am already in Karbala and I am surrounded by enemies. I'm surrounded by enemies. What difference do I ask? I've got into the habit of asking you these questions. What good did it do to Imam Hussein alayhi salam to call Habib? Would it have made any difference to the result? He knew he was going to be martyred, but it is this honor that Habib receives. Everybody goes with Imam Hussein alayhi salam. Habib is written a letter and is invited in writing towards heaven. His place in heaven is so reserved. Imam Hussein alayhi salam writes a letter to Habib and says, oh Habib, I am surrounded by enemies in Karbala. Can you please come over so that you too become a help for me? It is clear that Imam Hussein alayhi salam so much craves for the company of Habib, his childhood friend. He wants him to be with him even to the last day. Even today, we go and salute Habib before we reach Imam Hussein alayhi salam in Karbala. This is how Imam Hussein alayhi salam planned. But look at the significance of Imam Hussein alayhi salam. When the letter reaches, the wife asks Habib, I see a letter has come. What is it? And Habib says, oh my dear wife, it's a letter from Imam Hussein that he is surrounded in Karbala and he wants help from me. The wife says, Habib, what are you thinking? What will you do? And Habib says, I will sit and consider, do I want to involve myself in this battle between two princes? Look at what Habib says. What is at the back of his mind is, I've got to provide for the family. But look at the courage of that lady. Ladies of this century will now have a lesson from the wife of Habib. She turns now and says, oh Habib, if you are not deciding now to go and help the grandson of the Prophet, you look after the house and I will go to help Hussein and I will sacrifice my life. Habib says, having said heard this, I set out, but I had already prepared my horse to be somewhere in the hiding. Condition in Kufa was such that Habib could not come out openly. And when I got to the horse was now weeping. The horse was almost saying to Habib, oh Habib, if you are delaying going to Karbala, I will gallop to Karbala on my own to help Hussein alayhi salam. And this is how Habib reaches Karbala. And when he reaches Karbala, he receives the salams of the Zainab. The Zainab, knowing that Habib has come, says to Abbas, oh Abbas, convey my salams to Habib. Habib says, oh Allah, what day is on my friend Hussein that even a member of the household of the Prophet should send salam to me? Ultimately, Habib goes and fights. And when he is martyred at that age, Imam Hussein alayhi salam goes to the side of Habib and says, Ya Habibi, Ya Habib, even you are deserting me now. Habib, this is not the time to desert me. Indeed, when Imam Hussein alayhi salam was totally alone, last words of Masahib, when Imam Hussein alayhi salam was alone in Karbala, the famous words are, Yandaru ila yaminihi wa shimali, he looks to the right and the left to see if there is anybody to help him. And the first call he makes is, Aina, Aina, Habibi, Habib ibn Mazahir. Where is Habib ibn Mazahir? On whom I get now help. Ala la'natullahi ala al-qawm al-zalimin. وسيعلم الذين ظلموا أي منقلب ينقلبون إنا لله وإنا إليه راجعون رحم الله من يقرأ الفاتحة.
Thank you.